Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janna Bala Bhagiravarir Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanacharya. Yamuna Tira Vanacharya. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvraja Kachara Sotera Sada Shri Shimna's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nandakota Vaishnavinda Ki Jai. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vasaya Buddhaya Sri Mati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitinamani Namaste Sarasvadevam Gauravanavicharani Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschacha Deshita. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 13, Text 8. Tadvidehi namastubhyam karmas vidyatma shaktishu karmas vidyatma shaktishu yatkritveha yasho vishvag amutra chad bhaved gati. Tadvidehi namastubhyam karmas vidyatma shaktishu yat kritveha yasho vishvag amutra chad bhaved gati. Tadvidehi namastubhyam karmas vidyatma shaktishu yat kridveha yasho vishvag amutra cha bhaved gati. Ladies, Tadvidehi namastubhyam Svidyatma Shaktishu. Anyone else? Okay. Tut. That. Videhi. Give direction. Namaha. My obeisances. Tubhyam. Unto you. Karmasu. In duties. Idya. A worshipable one. Atma Shaktishu, within our working capacity, yet which, kritva, doing, iha, in this world, yasha, fame, vishvak, everywhere, amutra, in the next world, cha, and, bhavet, it should be, Gati, progress. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O Worshipful One, please give us your direction for the execution of duty within our working capacity so we can follow it for fame in this life and progress in the next. Purport. Brahma is the direct recipient of Vedic knowledge from the Personality of Godhead. And anyone discharging his entrusted duties in disciplic succession from Brahma is sure to gain fame in this life and salvation in the next. The disciplic succession from Brahma is called Brahma Sampradaya, and it descends as follows. Brahma, Narada, Vyas, Madhvamuni or Puraprajna, Padmanabha, Nirhari, Madhava, Akshobhya, Jayatirtha, Jnanasindhu, Dayanidhi, Vijayanidhi, Rajendra, Jayadharma, Purushottama, Brahmanyatirtha, Vyastirtha, Lakshmipati, Madhavendrapuri, Ishwarapuri, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sarup Damodar and Sri Rupa Goswami and others, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Krishnadas Goswami, Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. This line of disciplic succession from Brahma is spiritual, whereas the genealogical succession from Manu is material, but both are on the progressive march toward the same goal of Krishna consciousness. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Nimitamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Garadhar Shivasiti Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Vrishabhana Zute Devi Pranamami Hari Bare. So spiritual knowledge is given to us, all of the human beings, jivas in the material world, through the process of disciplic succession, or parampara. This is one of the unique features of this Krishna conscious movement. I would say at least unique in terms of so many other groups, and so many other movements, so many other religions that we see today, that we have this intact succession of one spiritual master teaching another spiritual master that goes for 5,000 years, beginning with Lord Krishna himself. I remember as a new devotee, when I first heard this point about the parampara and the disciplic succession, read about it in the Bhagavad Gita, it was something that was very important to me. I could really see how this movement was different than other movements. And remember that time back in the early 70s, late 60s, there were so many different groups and movements around, different yogis, things like that. But how many of them could the particular current speaker or current, you know, professor of knowledge, one who professes knowledge, how many could trace back where they learned their spiritual knowledge and where their teacher had learned his spiritual knowledge on back like this for thousands of years? it didn't exist really outside of the Krishna consciousness movement. So I always thought this was very wonderful, not only for our own understanding, but I thought it was always a very strong preaching point. You know, how we, because I would remember always telling people that this is, look, we have thousands of years of spiritual knowledge that begins from the direct revelation of God and is passed down for 5,000 years, one spiritual master to another. And the quality of all of these teachers and acharyas is that they were all pure. They were purely serving God, purely serving Krishna, and therefore the message remained intact. Now, Prabhupada often talked about this is the qualification of an acharya. This is the main qualification of someone who is in disciplic succession, acting as a spiritual master, is that they deliver the same message as given by their spiritual master and their spiritual master all the way back to what Krishna first revealed to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, and of course, throughout all the different Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam, etc., to so many great devotees of the Lord. And of course, Prabhupada very much promoted this concept. I mean, the very fact that his, I always really liked that, it was always Bhagavad Gita as it is. In other words, not as he concocted it, or he thought it, or, you know, some new idea he had, or here's a new philosophy that I'm going to astound the world with. No. But here is the philosophy as it has been given by Krishna, as the great sadhus, the great saints and sages throughout time have given the same message. And it doesn't, it's not a change message. Sometimes the message is adapted to time and circumstance, you know, so that people of a certain time, such as young Americans in the 60s and 70s, could understand the message. But the essential message is not changed. And that is always there. Very, very important that spiritual knowledge comes through the specific succession. Now, we know there are four Vaishnav Sampradayas, or different disciplic successions. We have the Sri or Lakshmi Sampradaya, which is represented in modern, when I say modern times, I mean within the last 1,000 years or so. Because most of these, you know, they're around 900, 1,000, very, very early on. But still, in well into the Kali Yuga, the Sri Sampradaya was represented by Ramanuja, the Kumara Sampradaya by Nimbarkacharya, the Rudra or Shiva Sampradaya by Vishnu Swami, and of course the Brahma Sampradaya by Madhvacharya. Now, one could say, well, these are all bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas. What's the difference? Does it matter which one you're in? I suppose not, except for one detail, an important detail. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chose to take initiation within the Brahma Madhva Sampradaya. So therefore, it's even especially important to us because we are not only directly in a Sampradaya from Lord Krishna, but also from Lord Chaitanya when he came 500 years ago and began the Sankirtan move and the chanting of the holy name. So it's really very glorious. And I don't know, I always felt a little bit proud to be part of this because we are also in the Sampradaya. We're disciples of Srila Prabhupada or disciples of Srila Prabhupada. So we are continuing. At least we are meant to continue. Whether we can do it, to what extent, to what capacity, depending upon our own level of advancement and purity, that's another question. But still, we are in this Sampradaya, in this Parampara, and we are meant to continue it onward. So it's quite a, not only is something to be proud of, but it's also very humbling. It's very humbling to be even considered as a member of the Sampradaya with the glorious spiritual masters and sadhus of the past that we see. If we look at our list is gone now. I was going to say, if we look at the list, we see it starts, of course, from Lord Brahma, the first person in the universe, the creator of the universe. And not only that, but what a incredible devotee. When you look at, read something like Brahma Samhita, and see the realization, the direct realization of someone who has seen the spiritual world and described Goloka Vrindavan. This is somebody very, very special. And he's the leader of our Sampradaya. And on down through Narada Muni. How many stories of Narada Muni? One of the greatest preachers and considered a Shaktivish avatar who exhibits the quality or the characteristic of bhakti. Other sampradaya, the Kumaras, they also are Shaktive, they are Avesha who represent jnana. So there's so many wonderful devotees that we see. Vyasadeva, literary incarnation, right? Compiled all of the Vedas, put them in written form 5,000 years ago so that they would be here for us, for all of us throughout history. Then we come on down the line a little bit and we finally get to Bhagavad Gita-less Lord Chaitanya. Then Prabhupada says here, what does he say? Sarupa and Rupa, and then Raghunath. Now, in the in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, at the end of it is the disciplic succession, and there, Prabhupada has put it, Rupa and Sanatan, I think, and Sarup, and then after that, Raghunath and Jiva. The fact is that at that time there were hundreds of pure devotees, all these Nitya Lila devotees that came to our planet to help Lord Chaitanya with his mission. You know, so there were so many great spiritual masters, it's hard to even list them all or put them all in there because, you know, it was a very glorious time for Vaishnavism. But at any rate, a couple of questions about the disciplic succession that sometimes come up is, what about the gaps? We say it's unbroken, but yet we know Vyasadeva appeared 5,000 years ago. Madhvacharya, next in line, appeared when? 1,000 years ago? Something like that? When is it?
1,200 years.
Only 900 years then. Yeah, okay. 900 years ago. What happened? Well, Madhvacharya, as we know, took a little trip, a very long trip, but he was incredibly strong and incredibly able and capable, and he went to the Himalayas, and in the Himalayas, Vyasadeva, who is, of course, a great yogi, who can basically live practically indefinitely as long as he wanted, was still there in Bhadrika Ashram. Madhvacharya visited him and learned from him. Actually, I think he actually presented some of his work, didn't he, to Vyasadeva for confirmation, you know, and said, yes, this is good, you know. So, in other words, therefore accepting Vyasadeva as guru, and therefore continued on through the disciplic succession. The other thing, sometimes we see some other gaps in it. For instance, Narottam Das Thakur is listed, and the next is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. There's actually three generations in between. We know their names. You can find them. And I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's spiritual master was Radharaman. Anybody know? I think it was Radharaman. Anyway, there were two before that. So Prabhupada just explained it very simply. The list we have is those who are prominent. Those were three great devotees. They're pure devotees. But we don't know much about them. You know, they didn't have extensive writing or, you know, they didn't. For some reason, they're just people we don't know much about, so they're not listed. So we have the most prominent spiritual masters in this particular list. Now, in this purport, Prabhupada makes a distinction between genealogical succession and spiritual succession, because the story that we're reading is about how Brahma's propagating human beings, you know, throughout the world. So first, Brahma's son, Swayambhuva Manu, is there, and he wants them to propagate progeny because there's nobody in the world. He's just creating. So we have to fill it up with some people. So Sataputta and Swayambhuva Manu, which very interesting. Of course, Ganesham Prabhu was talking about the Friday, and it gave us, I thought, a very, very interesting class or idea of how Swayambhuva Manu represented principles of family systems. It was very interesting, really, you know, about how, you know, in other words, talking about how one's attitude towards authority might affect one's attitude towards spirituality or religion or one's relationship with God. And because he had such a wonderful relationship, of course, Swayambhuva Manu with his father, and one of love and respect and spirituality, then naturally he was very attached to God, to Krishna. That's something when I was the CPO director, I actually studied that quite a bit. There really is, the reason I'm bringing this up is just that I was thinking when I heard it, there's actually a very strong connection between children who have suffered abuse and their spirituality or their commitment to religion sometimes, not always, but it can happen. That because the idea of an authority is something that has been very negative, so to surrendering to the authority of God can sometimes be very difficult Anyway, that was just an interesting side point and nothing to do with what we're talking about today. Moving on. Anyway, genealogical succession, sometimes it's called seminal succession in the scriptures, Prabhupada says, can lead to spiritual realization. It can be a value on the progressive path of people becoming Krishna conscious. But he said it's material compared to a spiritual disciplic succession, which is not based upon family so much, but is based upon one spiritual master enlightening the next on down. So it can lead to spiritual realization as long as these are very great personalities and they are also teaching, you know, spiritual knowledge. So often, of course, one's children or descendants will have similar qualities. You see that a lot of times. You'll see someone who's, you know, a professional or a doctor or something. And his children sometimes are doctors also, but not always. It's not a given. It's not guaranteed. And sometimes they will and sometimes they won't. By the way, if you can remember that list, hoped we'd have it back up there, there's actually three pairs of devotees who are related in our disciplic succession. Can you think of them? Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda Kaur, father and son. That's the first. Well, who else? Way, way back. Brahma Narada, his son. Narada is his son. So we see sometimes it actually does apply that. And who? Oh, yeah, that's true, but Shukadeva is not really in our disciplic succession exactly. Although there's an example, a good example, the father and son are both are, you know, highly qualified Mahajans, you know. Think around Lord Chaitanya's disciples. Right, you got the brothers, Rupa and Sanatan, and their nephew, Jiva Goswami, right? So that does happen. Then you also have a very great king like King Anga, and his son was Vena, who was a big demon. So you see what I'm saying? You can't count on the father and the son or the mother and the, you know, having like the same qualities or having great qualities, you know. So there are exceptions to this. We also see in more modern times, in Chaitanya, not Chaitanya Charitamrita, but in Chaitanya, which one am I thinking of? Which book am I thinking of, Pundarik? Chaitanya Bhagavat. Bhaktisiddhanta writes a lot in his purports about bogus sampradayas, doesn't he? If you remember that, Boga, you know, he talks about the different Nityananda Vamsas. He talks about, because it was very prominent then, very, very strong. And so he was like, sometimes it seemed like he was so almost angrily, because they were ruining Vaishnavism. You know, he had to try to defeat them because you had what's called the Nityananda Vamsas, because they said they were related to the family of Lord Nityananda, therefore they were naturally spiritual masters. No, not necessarily. They weren't. In fact, they were philosophically off. Look at Advaitacharya, Mahavishnu. Six sons. Three good sons, three bad sons, right? And the bad sons, didn't they preach impersonal philosophy or, you know, something off, you know, a little bit. And then, of course, the good sons were continued, like Chutananda, right? Continued Krishna consciousness. So just making that point where the Prabhupada is making here about that the spiritual disciplic succession, the spiritual parampara is what is really important. Now, I thought it's also interesting, though, since we're talking about Manu, I was thinking about another Manu who's involved in another disciplic succession. Any thoughts? Actually, our Manu, in this age, Vaivishvata Manu, he was involved in which disciplic succession? Fourth chapter, Bhagavad Gita. Right? Krishna instructed the sun god, Vivishvan, who instructed Manu. In that case, it's actually probably even has it in the word for word in the fourth chapter that it's Vaivishvata Manu, and then to Ikshvaku, and the great kings heard it in this way. So this was actually a Kshatriya, the disciplic succession, another one, a little bit different. This was through the kings because they had to know spiritual knowledge. How could they lead people in the correct way to lead people to the progressive, you know, platform of God consciousness if they did not understand this philosophy? But what happened? In due course of time, It was broken. The disciplic succession was broken. Therefore, Krishna had to again speak it to Arjuna to revive the disciplic succession of the Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, that was a Kshatriya Sampradaya. I'm not going to read this all, but Prabhupada in the fourth chapter there, some nice purports, really explains this. And he talks about how Manu spoke the Bhagavad Gita to his disciple Maharishi Ikshvaku about 2 million years ago. So it goes back quite a ways. Because we're looking at, he talks about how it's the different yugas, and it was the beginning of the Treta Yuga or something. Anyway, and then so it's been, he said, it's been the Bhagavad Gita has been existing in human society at least 2 million years. And he said, then it was re-spoken by the Lord again to Arjuna 5,000 years ago. That's a rough estimate of the history of the Gita, according to the Gita itself. Now, of course, I've always wondered, well, what happened to the disciplic succession from Arjuna? Well, we do know that there was a, Arjuna's, who followed Arjuna? Well, I'll be mind you, but of course, he was killed at 16, so then it was Maharishi Parikshit, right? And then after Maharishi Parikshit was who, Janmanjaya? Or someone before Janmanjaya? Anyway, there was a, you know, we have, who? After Parikshit. Okay, so we know from the Bhagavatam a few names that the, you know, it continued a few, and then it kind of seems like you don't hear much, right? There's only a few listed because it's Kali Yuga. And as Kali Yuga is progressing, these great dynasties of from the Pandavas, they can only last a certain amount of time, right? I mean, they're not going to go on forever in Kali Yuga. So again, it becomes somewhat broken. However, the disciplic succession of the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya continues. And of course, it has ups and downs too. Like we know from our writings of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada that in the, late 1800s or so, that Vaishnavism was in a very bad situation, very much degraded. Just wasn't, you know, nothing was happening. Or if anything, it was being misrepresented and you had all these different sampradayas and things going on. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to reestablish the truth, reestablished true Vaishnavism. Then that was carried on, of course, by his son, Bhaktisiddhanta, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, and, of course, Srila Prabhupada. So sometimes the Sampradaya is a little up, a little bit down in terms of its prominence and influence, but the teaching remains. It's like a line that goes through history, that it is there. Maybe hard to find sometimes. I believe Bhaktivinoda Thakur had trouble finding a good copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Can you imagine that? That even in Bengal, he really couldn't find a good original, correct copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita? Rather amazing. But anyway, such as it is. So, next point. If we look at the disciplic succession, we will see, if we look very closely, that we have different relationships amongst the different members. Many of them are Diksha Guru relationships where one initiated the next, but not always. Sometimes those relationships are Shiksha. In fact, some devotees have suggested that our whole Sampradaya is probably as much Shiksha as Diksha, if not more. And we can see many examples of that, actually. But we'll get to that in a minute. But it's interesting because there are different types of gurus, but they are considered one, in a sense, or equally important, in a sense. In fact, we've all heard of Shiksha and Diksha, but in the Bhaktisandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami says there are three gurus. First, there's the Shravana Guru. Shravana means hearing, right? So Shravana Guru is one you hear from. And he says, by the association with the Shravana Guru, there must be arousal of knowledge of Scripture. So any devotee who is like preaching, telling us about the Scripture, inspiring us to read the Scriptures, to understand the philosophy, that's a Shravana Guru. We could have many of those. And then he says, out of many of these Shravana Gurus you may be hearing from, you might select one that you're very attracted to who becomes Shiksha Guru. Shiksha means instruction. So the difference is the Shiksha Guru doesn't just speak the philosophy, but also gives instruction. Might tell you how to help you to practice sadhana, like that, right? Actually give you instruction in your spiritual life to help you. Now, often the Shiksha Guru will become the Diksha Guru, but not necessarily, not always. In fact, it says there can be more than one Shiksha Guru, but in how many mantra or Diksha Gurus can one have? One. Only one. That's the rule. So the guru or initiating spiritual master or the Diksha Guru is called the mantra guru because one of their main functions is giving the mantra. Now you may think, well, yeah, but lots of people are chanting Hare Krishna. You might hear it from there and there. But remember that in previous times, we have like two initiations in ISKCON, but originally there was only one, really, right? People would get Gayatri mantra. And they would, you know, get the Brahma initiation. That was initiation. So that mantra, the Gayatri mantra, which was kept somewhat secret, I imagine. I don't know how secret. I don't think it's very secret anymore. But, you know, it was. And then it was given, whispered in the ear to the disciples. So in that way, the mantra guru was giving the mantra. And one important thing about receiving the mantra, there was a lot of important things. First of all, it's very purifying. I mean, because those are very, very powerful mantras. Especially the 6th and 7th, you know, there's like, our acharyas have written whole little books on those mantras explaining, you know, the meaning of them. And in fact, the sixth mantra is spoken directly by Lord Brahma in Brahma Samhita. So they're very, very important. But beyond that, what does it qualify one to do? Deity worship, exactly. And that's one of the important things about the mantra initiation and Diksha, is then one can go on the altar, worship the deities, cook for the deities, etc. So a very, very important part of our whole, you know, Vaishnav sadhana and Vaishnav worship, right? Now, as I was thinking about this, looks like we have several Prabhupada disciples here. How many of you who are Prabhupada disciples had Prabhupada personally whisper the Gayatri mantra in your ear? Anybody? How many heard it on tape recorder? Some of you? How many of you never got it? No. Oh, okay. Well, I guess Prabhupada could, you know, empower one of his disciples to do it. But I mean, I remember we had a speaker butt or whatever we had back in the 70s, and you know, and heard Prabhupada with a tape. So Prabhupada on his tape, I believe that he would say one word at a time and we'd repeat it, and we'd just hear it in our ear on the tape recorder. So that's how Prabhupada gave us the Gayatri mantra to us. So anyway, I think why sometimes where there's confusion about, and it's taken us a long time to understand some of these principles about Shiksha and Diksha, because in the beginning Prabhupada was everything, wasn't he? Prabhupada was our Vartma Padarsha Guru, he was our Shravana Guru, he was our Shiksha Guru, he was our Diksha Guru. It's all we knew was Prabhupada. So things may be a little bit different now where we can get instruction from different places, but historically we just basically, we knew nothing. And Prabhupada was our source of information, our source of inspiration, our source of example of how to be a devotee. So that's what we listen to. So the Diksha Guru, of course, is primary. But one may also have a very close relationship or similar relationship with a Shiksha Guru. I was thinking of Krishnadas Kaviraj as a good example. Technically, his spiritual master is considered to be Nityananda, right? Because Nityananda came to him a dream and like that. But he took shelter of Sarup Damodar, I think. And Sarup Damodar, anyway, he was sent to Vrindavan to take shelter of Goswamis. So at the end of every single chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says, who does he offer his respects to? Rupa and Raghunath, right? Now, beyond that, I don't know if any of you have read Govinda Lilamrita. It's an absolutely wonderful book written by Krishnadas Kaviraj. We always think of him as Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Lila, but Govinda Lilamrita is a wonderful book written by him about Krishna Lila in Vraja. And very, very sweet, and you can see his level of realization. Krishnadas Kaviraj is like of the highest order of devotee. Well, we already know that. I'm not saying anything you don't know. But you can, and in fact, at the end of every chapter in that book, he says, this is his paragraph he writes, as a result of service to Sri Rupa Goswami, who is a bee at the lotus feet of Chaitanya, directed by the actions of Sri Raghunath, manifested by the association of Sri Jiva, and arising by the blessings of Sri Raghunath Bhatta, this chapter of Govinda Lilamrita has been completed. So he's citing four Shiksha Gurus every chapter. Govindali Lamrita. Basically, all the six Goswamis were his Shiksha gurus, it comes down to. So I'm just saying that to sort of reinforce the point that the Shiksha, idea of Shiksha can be very, very important. Okay, now I got to get back to my notes. Now, more recently, we have our recent examples in very close to us. Prabhupada explains this. This is in a letter to Dayananda in 1969. Prabhupada said, Thakur Bhakti Vinod was not the official spiritual master of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was already in the renounced order, Paramahamsa. But Thakur Bhakti Vinod, while he was even playing the part of a householder, was treated by Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj as preceptor on account of his highly elevated spiritual understanding, and thus he was always treating him as his spiritual master. Spiritual master divided into two parts, namely Shiksha Guru and Diksha Guru. So officially, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was like Shiksha Guru of Gaurakishore Das Babaji. And I believe that Jagannath Das Babaji was not the actual Diksha Guru of Bhaktivinoda. Again, he was his Shiksha Guru. So we have so many of these examples, even in very recent history in the last two or three generations. This is a nice understanding from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 135. Mantra Guru Ara Yatra Chiksha Guru Gaya Tahara Charan Age Kariya Landana. Excuse me, somehow the Sanskrit totally scrambled what I wrote, so I don't know what I'm reading here. I first offer my respectful obeisance as the lotus feet of my instructing spiritual masters and all of my initiating spiritual master and all of my instructing spiritual masters. Purport. A devotee must have only one initiating spiritual master because in the scriptures, acceptance of more than one is always forbidden. There is no limit, however, to the number of instructing spiritual masters one may accept. Generally, a spiritual master who constantly instructs a disciple in spiritual science becomes his initiating spiritual master later on. So I think it would be a great benefit to our movement if these principles of Shiksha and Diksha were, you know, better understood and implemented in a better way, but be as it may. Spiritual knowledge is understood through a bona fide spiritual master, and bona fide spiritual master can be Diksha or Shiksha. The spiritual master is authorized because of having heard from their spiritual master. So our faith in the spiritual master is partly to do with their particular qualities that they manifest, partly to do with their instructions, but it's also the strength of the entire parampara gives the guru even more authority. 434 purport, and 434, of course, is Tadvidi Pranipatena, right, about the spiritual master. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following the principles of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord to his disciples. No one can be a spiritually realized by manufacturing their own process. So, of course, there's a certain mood to the spiritual master. Prabhupada says, the guru does not accept respect from his disciple for his personal self, but conveys that respect to Krishna. So it goes back, Prabhupada explaining the disciplic succession, evam paramtara praptam. The guru offers the same respect to his guru offers respect to his, and it goes all the way back to Krishna. That's the principle of parampara. So how does this apply to us? Well, first of all, I think it's to have a good understanding of these principles, but it also shows us very much how Srila Prabhupada exemplified the perfect spiritual master, perfectly following parampara, perfectly following guru, and giving us knowledge that will last for years, decades, centuries, thousands of years. So we understand that Srila Prabhupada is what we call the preeminent Shiksha Guru for the ISKCON movement. Obviously, those devotees that come after Srila Prabhupada disappeared from this planet will not have Srila Prabhupada as a Diksha Guru. But everybody can understand, appreciate, and value Prabhupada as our Shiksha Guru. Because Srila Prabhupada helps link so many people to Krishna consciousness. Now, we need to accept, of course, a living, bona fide spiritual master. But every devotee in ISKCON follows the teachings and examples of Srila Prabhupada. And every devotee can have a spiritual relationship with Srila Prabhupada. I have found that often with younger devotees, sometimes some of them who weren't even born when Srila Prabhupada was here, often have very deep, deep feelings about Srila Prabhupada. I've heard some of our next generation who have dreams about Srila Prabhupada, more than I do. they seem to have, some of them have a very, very deep spiritual feeling, because that relationship is not material, which means it's not bound by material time and space. A spiritual relation can actually exist outside of the material parameters of time and space. Okay. So I'm just going to conclude here, which I've read this before, but I like this very much. About 10 years ago, the GBC wrote a statement on the position of Srila Prabhupada. I remember we spent some time with this. We had these meetings, Shesh, you probably remember, where we kind of like everyone talk about every single word in the statement, you know, and how it looked and how it sounded. And actually, just to give you the history a little bit, I think the primary authors were Anuttama Prabhu and Radhanath Swami, and then we all kind of chipped into it. Anyway, I think this was very good. I think this was a time. I don't think the GBC is always directed by Krishna or directed by, you know, supremely directed, but I think in this case they were. I think in this case there was some definite help. The statement was, as the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON, and the preeminent teacher and ultimate authority within our society, Srila Prabhupada has a unique relationship with every ISKCON devotee. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the original guru whose divine grace descends through the medium of the guru parampara. As such, a devotee is ultimately delivered by Sri Krishna, acting through a combination of various manifestations of his mercy. These include, but not limited to, the Chaitanya Guru, Guru in the Heart, Srila Prabhupada, the Guru Parampara, one's Diksha Guru, other Shiksha Gurus, the Holy Name, Shastra, and the nine processes of devotional service. Within these cooperative elements, Srila Prabhupada, as the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is the preeminent Shiksha Guru for all members of ISKCON. All members of ISKCON for all generations are encouraged to seek shelter of Srila Prabhupada. All members of ISKCON are entitled and encouraged to have a personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada through his books, teachings, service, and his ISKCON society. All members accepting leadership roles within ISKCON, including Diksha Gurus and Shiksha Gurus, have the duty of serving together under the governing body commission to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's instructions as given in his books, lectures, and personal communications. Overall, the primary duty of all Diksha Gurus, Shiksha Gurus, and others in leadership positions is to assist Srila Prabhupada in his service to his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and our Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. It goes on a little longer, but that's kind of the gist of it, like that. So, end of that point. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Questions, comments, realizations? Anybody? Ladies? Tony?
You said that in the 60s and 70s, Prabhupada was everything, including the Vartma Pradarshika gurus, but...
No, maybe not always.
in most cases, not, actually.
Well, yeah, not Vartma Pradarshika, which is the first devotee you meet, that kind of gets you...
The one
you
who
involved.
Points the way, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of remember the first devotee.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Good clarification. But certainly Shravanam, Shiksha, and Diksha.
Yeah.
Okay. Prangavendra?
I was thinking logically, if somebody say, I need bhakti, I need mantra, so I can get this from Guru, and then I can start worshipping Radha Krishna. What do I need Guru Parampara for? I need Guru and Radha Krishna, that's it. Why do I have to emphasize, glorify Guru Parampara? But very nice point you mentioned, maybe you can add more, that essential principle of Mahaprabhu's teaching or Radha Krishna's teaching carried out as it is without
deviating.
Or altering. So that's a very nice solid point, that essential principle, that what our Guru Parampara is giving, they all have the same thing, and if somebody deviates, we don't respect that.
And what you're saying isn't something completely unknown to us. We've seen that sometimes, haven't we? That someone's just really very interested to get initiated, to have a name, whatever, you know, to be able to, and so they get initiated by somebody, and they may not really be thinking about what is that qualification in Parampara, what are their, you know, what is that solid history of the Vaishnava tradition, and carrying it on exactly intact like that. So that is very important. And Prabhupada is even saying that because Prabhupada accepts our service, but he's offering the service to Bhaktisiddhanta, so in other words, it's being offered all the way back to Krishna. I mean, I don't know how that happens exactly, literally, you know, but we can understand that we hear it, that that's the fact, you know.
I was thinking also, Jiva Goswami Pad, I believe in Bhakti Sandarbha, he says, Dibbam Ganam Hiyatra Simati Mantres Bhagavat Sammanda Vishesh Rupa Bhagavat Sammanda Bhagavat Ganam Cha. The definition of initiation means Guru who knows the Ishtadev or particular soul's relationship with particular form of the Lord, and he connects that because he has that ability, so he connects that. And he gives the example of Narad Muni, who is a guru of Chitraketu Maharaj, and his Ishtadev or the Lord was Shankarshan. Same Narad Muni, Dhruva Maharaj with Narayan, same Narad Muni, Prahlad Maharaj with Nrisimhadev, same Narad Muni, he gave like example, even though Guru is the same, but because he sees Bhagavat Sammanda Vishesha Gyanam Cha. So because he sees each soul has a particular relationship. So yeah. How do we see that? How can you give some lights on it? How Ishkan disciple or...
Well, I think that's... it's a tricky point in a sense. One good friend of mine who's a spiritual master, sannyasi, was telling me about this, that he has a disciple who's insisting that he should tell her siddhadeha, her eternal position, Vrindavan, because that's the duty of the spiritual master. And he's kind of thinking, well, no, because you're not ready for it, you know. Even if he said, even if I could, she's, you know, not really qualified. Now, I've read two or three different things from both Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami where they indicated that that one's eternal position, relationship with Krishna, was more something that was revealed in the heart, that came through the heart. I know Bhaktivinoda Thakur often takes the idea that the guru tells you or that or gives that to you, but other acharyas, I haven't seen that so much. You know, that it's necessarily like that. And even Bhaktivinoda Thakur often says something like, when the guru sees that propensity, in other words, it's already evolving within the devotee, or already he's already coming to that point of realization or, you know, advancement, and then maybe he's, you know, confirming or verifying that. You know, but I don't see that as the main activity of the spiritual master in our movement. I think that's something that when you're at that level, then it becomes revealed somehow or another.
I don't know if it is appropriate to ask you the question, but, well, I'm already asking. So, shut up.
I think you are.
Does it ever bothered you, or does it ever, I'm sure you thought about it maybe, what is Prabhupada's Swarup? Like, it looks like outside ISKCON, there is a group of outside ISKCON, non-ISKCON devotee. They split into two groups because of Prabhupada's Swarup, even though in ISKCON we are not splitting because of Prabhupada's Swarup. So Swarup means the Prabhupada's position in spiritual world.
Well, Prabhupada never told us, did he?
Not yes, that sir. I know.
Not that I know of. Therefore, I don't think I need to inquire too much down those lines because Prabhupada didn't tell us. And I think he would have indicated or told us if he thought that was really important for us. And I know there's arguments. I mean, a coward boy, there's arguments. My point is, doesn't matter. I was reading something else when I was preparing for this class where Prabhupada said very clearly in a purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the spiritual master is usually a representative of Lord Nityananda or Srimati Radharani.
Yes.
Right? So, both are pretty good. I'll take either one for my spiritual master.
But it never occurred with a coward boy or...
I don't think he ever did. Shruti Kirti, well, I don't want, it's pretty personal. Shruti Kirti told me one incident with Srila Prabhupada. You know, he was with him for a couple of years. But actually, Prabhupada indicated to him more what his position was rather than what Prabhupada's own position was. So that's the only time I know of Prabhupada. And he was said in kind of a joking way, actually. It wasn't like, you are this, you should, you know, like he was supposed to do something about it and start acting, you know what I mean? It was kind of a, he said in a very light-handed way, like, oh, you like this, don't you? This is what you're attracted to or whatever, and, you know. But it wasn't something Prabhupada talked about or discussed or certainly, of course, now we were all totally neophyte. We're talking 45, 50 years ago. Who knows today whether it would be different? I don't know. Maybe. But I think Prabhupada would have still focused on the basics of Krishna consciousness, you know, and it's, you know, and we, one thing we should have faith in, and that is Krishna is in the heart, Krishna the Chaita Guru, the super soul in the heart, and he'll basically reveal to us what we need. I have that confidence. If I need something, I'm ready for it, Krishna will reveal it, or Prabhupada will reveal it. Otherwise, I probably don't need to think about it too much. Go ahead. You yeah, get your word in here.
Who, what?
I said, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm on. I'm a gopi. I'm a cow. I don't know. It's like it's good to engage the intellect, you know, about maybe this, maybe that. I wonder what this is like. I wonder what that's like. But we're not going to capture Krishna and our relationship with the intellect. You know, it is like you were emphasizing, it's something. If it is our eternal relationship, it's not like we got to think about it, it's just there. You know? It's not like, oh, I think I'm Pran Govinda, you know? You look in the mirror, there's Pran Govinda, man. It's not like you got to, geez, is that me? Who's that? You know?
Yeah. And you're not going to lose it.
Yeah.
Because it's there eternally.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere, you know? So... It's like when you're ready to experience it, it unfolds in the heart, like the Bhakti Kripa.
And that's what I have seen a couple of acharyas say something very similar to that. Yeah. Over here. Oh, and you get Madhubati also after. Oh, go ahead with.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you so much. I was just remembering that in some of the very early Vyasa Puja books, the offerings are like, oh, thank you so much, you gave us Radha and Krishna. They're really like that. And then a couple years into it, it's like Prabhupada sees where we're coming from and what our conditioning was, and things become much more awe and reverential.
Yeah.
You know, so I just commenting that, the way he presented.
Well, Prabhupada like always emphasized that we worship Radha and Krishna in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan, right? That's in awe and reverence. Now, the pujari, if they're very advanced, they can have an internal understanding of Radha and Krishna. That's fine. But we still do the external. We don't jump ahead and assume too much intimacy. Yeah. Madamati?
One comment and one question. I was just remembering this book. I think it's written Simple for the Simple. And I remember, I think, maybe anybody could correct me with that, but it was about a devotee in Europe, I think. Scotland, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she was an accountant. Her service was an accountant in that temple, all her Krishna consciousness. And then when she was passing away, apparently there was the book describes that how in that state of mind as she was leaving her body, she found herself in a position where she was assisting Mother Yashoda for Krishna's lunch. Very amazing book, but very faith-giving. Like she was, it didn't seem like she was just a simple devotee, just serving Krishna and serving Srila Prabhupada's movement and doing seva. None of that, what am I or who am I or what, you know. And yet, when the time was leaving her body, she seemed like Krishna was revealing.
I have no reason to disbelieve that.
Sorry?
I said, I have no reason to disbelieve that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, devotees are serving for decades, and Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada always gave us so much reassurances that if we follow this process, we go back home, back to Godhead. I mean, how many times did Prabhupada say that? So, yeah, we should believe that. I mean, believe at least it's possible for some of you who are advanced.
My question is, you're talking about disciplic succession, and what will be our disciplic succession, let's say, in 100 years? You know, we see, you know, Brahma, Narada, and everybody else, and then we have Srila Prabhupada, and then we have ISKCON. Yeah. What does that look like?
I'm afraid it will be able to look individual for each devotee, because I imagine there'll be many, many branches that'll be spreading. Uh-huh. Unless we have someone who comes up in some generation who is so prominent, you know, who becomes the central figure. But otherwise, it's going to be... Go ahead. Come from him.
So even if, you know, well, I don't know what I'm talking about here, but Lord Chaitanya came, he would be, you know, in the disciplic succession of Prabhupada within that pastime.
Right.
I'm not saying he would or whatever. Who knows? I can't speak.
No, do whatever he wants, yeah.
I mean, from a logistical standpoint, Prabhupada's the founder of Acharya of ISKCON, and there's no way around that.
But... Right. Well, there is I'm sure there's a disciplic succession in Ramanuja's line and all the other. In fact, one thing I was reading when I was reading this, Prabhupada said from Narada Muni, there are millions of devotees, you know, who have come from him because he's made so many devotees and going through all these different lines. So, you know, it does spread all over. And even in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, how many branches are listed? A couple hundred? A couple hundred branches of the Chaitanya tree. You know, so, yeah, but at the same time, let's say there's all these branches coming from Lord Chaitanya, but everyone sees Lord Chaitanya as the central figure, right? Right? We're all devotees of Mahaprabhu. So there may be all these branches, but all the devotees, at least within our sort of what, if they're still in this kind of society, who knows, you know, we'll still see Srila Prabhupada as a central figure. Right? Okay. At least that's what I foresee. I don't know. But Krishna hasn't. Guru.
Hari Bol. My guru is Satrupa Maharaj. He served Srila Prabhupada closely. And then he's been authorized by him to write. And he's been the most prolific writer in ISKCON, really. I mean, he's written so many literatures. So, I mean, he's written also Prabhupada Lamrita, you know. How would ISKCON devotees see his books? I mean, how should they, what do you think? I mean...
Oh, get whatever value they can. Devotees love Lilamrita, right? It's a source of inspiration. In fact, one interesting story, my wife's mother, who lived to 100, she was very intelligent. She was a college professor, but it was hard to get her really to read the philosophy or really interested. She didn't really have a sense so much of spirituality. But my wife sent her the Lilamritas, one volume at a time. And what she did, she wrote these annotated, you know, she kind of like rewrote, you know, said this happened. She gave a whole synopsis of the stories and everything. She really loved them. You know, so in other words, so she gained great benefit just becoming attracted to Srila Prabhupada in that way, you know, which maybe she wasn't thinking it was a philosophy, but obviously it was going to be, you know, seeping in a little bit. So yeah, no, the thing there again, Shiksha Guru is the idea. If one is attracted to, there are some of my godbrothers that, I don't know if I should say I consider them Shiksha Gurus, but you know, close, you know, they're very much mentors to me. I enjoy their writing or whatever, yeah. Why not?
Thank you.
Certain thing, can't we take it literally? Like when devotees were reading Nectar of Instruction, verse 8, that, I won't go the whole details, but the last part, Braja Anuragi, one should follow the footsteps of particular Brajabashi. And Prabhupada was next door, and they literally went there and asked Prabhupada, so which Brajabashi should we follow? And Prabhupada said, I am here.
He is Brajabashi.
So can't we take that literally? Yes, he's eternally Brajabashi. He revealed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That was the point. It's kind of like they were almost asking, well, do we need to go off to Radhakund or something and find somebody? No, he's right there. You know. Certainly he's a Brajabashi. Certainly he's an eternal associate of Krishna. I'm convinced.
I have a question, Prabhu, about the initiation.
Mm-hmm.
To be part of this sampradaya, that we need to be initiated, yes or not, and also Prabhupada said that the initiation is only a formality. Could you explain that, please?
No, my hearing's not real good. You said it'd be part of the sampradaya about initiation, and then what?
Also about the initiation, it's a formality only.
Is it only a formality? Well, I was reading something today that Robin said that initiation begins with hearing. So in other words, like Srila Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta in 1922 or whatever, he didn't actually take formal initiation until 10 years later, but yet in his heart, he was a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta. However, that formality is pretty important to us. I mean, I would say it's more than a formality in that one thing that Diksha does, that we weren't talking about, is that it's a commitment. I mean, I can have all these Shiksha gurus think, oh, I love that, yeah, he's great, he's talking this, I like this, I enjoy what they're saying, but Diksha also involves commitment, following the instructions. The Diksha guru says, chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, right? So in other words, that's a little stronger. That's a little bit more than just a formality, I think. You know, see what I'm saying? You know. It's like a contract. The spiritual master says, I'm going to help you in your spiritual life, and you need to follow these instructions. So it's a little stronger than the Shiksha-Guru relationship, in a sense. Can be. Anything else? We should end class. Thank you so much for your attention. Aguru Shishila Prabhupada.